On revenue will come to order for meeting on January 31st, the last day of January of 2007. Today we have a public hearing on four different bills, and I think for convenience, I'm going to open a public hearing on all four bills at the same time, which we will do. We'll open a public hearing on Health Bill 2229, 2232, 2234, and 2236. And having said that, I think we're going to hear first from Karen Gregory from the department to talk about some overall general issues on property tax issues that are related to these bills, and then we'll hear from those who are here to testify on the particular bills.
Great, thank you.
And Phillips here?
Oh, he is.
And Mr. Phillips, maybe you'd like to come up too. Karen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Karen Gregory. I'm the property tax administrator at the Department of Revenue. And today I'm here to talk with you about the County Assessment Funding Function Assistance Program, otherwise known as CAFA. In the late 1980s, the property tax system in Oregon was really disintegrating. There were a number of things going on. There was a bad economy. There were actually federal forest dollar issues at that time. And quite frankly, we're facing that disintegration potentially again today. In order to stabilize the property tax system, the legislature in the late 80s instituted this CAFA fund to support the system and to assure that counties would adequately, at least, or perhaps better, fund assessment and taxation. And the purpose for that is assessment and taxation is the engine for the counties, allowing them to provide all of the services to their citizens as well as the local governments. So today, the CAFA fund actually generates about $20 million a year back to the counties. And those dollars go to their general fund. It's derived from a $10 recording fee on almost all of the things that are recorded at the county level and a portion of delinquent taxes. Quarterly, every county sends their collections to the state, and then the state, in turn, redistributes that amount, those dollars, back out to the county. And it's, the distribution is based on an individual county percentage of the total amount spent statewide on assessment and taxation. So just as a quick example, if the total statewide cost in all 36 counties for the assessment and taxation function were $100 million and a county spent 3% of that, then they would get the 3% of the CAFA fund, which is today about 3% of the $20 million a year. Every year, county commissioners certify a certain level of funding for assessment and taxation at their county, and then the department basically approves that amount, making sure that the assessment and taxation function is funded at least an adequate level. It doesn't have to be a Cadillac, but it can't be any less than, you know, a very adequate level. The department approves the budget, and then the county gets quarterly payments from the CAFA account. And this is where the problem lies. If the county does not adhere to that certified amount during the year, then there are statutes that say that the department has to take, not distribute the money to the county, but keep those dollars and actually redistribute those dollars to the other 35 counties. So today, because we have some counties who are looking to potentially make cuts early in preparation for the funding crisis that they're looking at due to federal forest funds not coming through, some counties are looking at cutting into their assessment and taxation budgets in February or March this year. We've heard of Coos County who plan to cut at least two people, and we've heard rumors of other counties. So given the way the statutes read today, the department should withhold their distribution in April, which would, of course, add to their problems. And the way the law reads, their distribution would be distributed amongst the other counties. We've sent letters to all of the county commission chairs, letting them know what the law states and what our obligations are today. And if we actually do have counties who decide to make these cuts, my plan is to go and have conversations in person with the county commissioners, letting them know, you know, what our obligations are in this instance. Now, so obviously this is an immediate issue, and that's really why I asked to come talk with you today. There is a second piece to this, and actually you've heard some of that from Elizabeth Harshenko, our director, when she gave you the overview of the property tax system a couple of weeks ago. As I said, the commissioners go through and do their budgeting, and they have a certified plan for assessment and taxation, and the county commissioners are going through and building their budgets today for that. If those budgets are not adequate to fund assessment and taxation for the coming fiscal year, there's another statute that says the department will have to go in and do any assessment and taxation function that the county fails to do to an acceptable level. That's, you know, something that we'll be facing a few months down the road. I just wanted to give you a heads up to that piece, and we'll be working with the counties on that. So the reason I'm here is because we're immediately concerned with that first issue, which is the immediate reduction in some counties of staff. We are concerned about the need to withhold the revenues from those counties that are already in a fiscal crisis, and we're also concerned about the long-term impacts that anything under minimum funding will do to the property tax system. We have seen what has happened in the late 1980s, and quite frankly, we have counties out there who are just now getting up out of the hole that was dug by not being properly funded at that time. So we have the two concerns, holding back the dollars and disintegrating the system again. So that really encapsulates why I wanted to chat with you today. To share the current CAFA statutes and to let you, as our policymakers, give you the opportunity to consider some changes if you think changes are appropriate. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Phillips. You're signed up for all four bills, so I thought that we'd let you go next, and then we take others who are signed up on only some of them.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. Good afternoon. I think I'll start with 2229, House Bill 2229. It's the first one on the agenda. I just wanted to talk a little bit about this bill and tell you that the tax statements that county assessors create are generally based on one of two situations. Residential, for example, property, they know where your residence is. They send you a bill. Your house doesn't typically move. But for other kinds of property, like personal property and commercial property and industrial property, those kinds of property, the owners file returns, kind of like your income tax return. So you tell the assessor which property you have and where it is, because it may move from county to county. And so these returns are really critical for the assessor to have to know what, you know, property is there. That then they go through the process of valuing the property, calculating the tax, and sending you the statement. What sometimes happens is that mistakes are made on the returns. And the issue in this bill is that is the interest paid on refunded taxes from those mistakes. So if you overpay your tax based on misinformation in your return, you're entitled to a refund of the overpaid tax once that error is discovered and corrected. Now, you might be the one as the property owner to discover your own mistake, or the assessor might be the one that discovers it. But the interest is the critical point of this bill. Refund interest in the law, the general rule is there's no refund interest for property tax overpayments. There are some exceptions. The first exception to the rule is that if the assessor or the tax collector makes a mistake, if they make a mistake, they overbill you, you overpay, it's discovered, they refund, and you get interest on your refund. If you appeal and your value is reduced by the court and a refund is issued, that's another exception. Then you get interest on your refund. So there are a few exceptions in the law for interest. There is no exception in the law for if you, let's say you report 10 machines and you only have 2 machines. You pay your tax and then it's discovered and you get a refund. It was your mistake. No interest is paid. The same exact circumstance, however, if you appeal your value, generates a refund with interest. So 2 people, both overreported, double reported property. One appeals, one does not. Because of the provision for the appeal, that person gets interest on their mistake. And the other person who didn't appeal but discovered the problem gets no interest. So that's kind of complicated, I think. But try to make it as simple as possible. We're trying to clarify, ask for you to clarify the policy for the people who make their own mistakes on their own return, that no interest is payable on those mistakes. That's the point of the bill. As I mentioned earlier, if the assessor makes a mistake, refund is made, interest is paid. If the taxpayer or the assessor make a mistake and additional property is discovered years later, then the taxpayer is billed and no interest is payable by the taxpayer. So this kind of tries, what this tries to do is to make it work both ways the same. If the taxpayer owes more money, they pay no interest. And if the taxpayer owes less money, then they shouldn't get interest. That's kind of the door swings both ways concept. So, in a nutshell.
Great, that's helpful. Before we go on, I think we'll have Mary go ahead and give us the summary on this bill.
The one sentence summary?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yes. The one sentence summary is that the intent of the bill is to reduce the interest that's paid on a property tax refund to an amount that is equal to the portion of the refund that is not attributable to inaccurate reports. So our statements are written information that was provided by the taxpayer. And usually, as we discussed, as John and I discussed earlier, it's only your utilities and your companies, not individuals, that are usually making reports, filing reports on tax, in property tax anyway. And this pertains to an appeal also. Okay, that's it.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? The people who file reports are businesses.
Yes, Mr. Chair, such as the example you gave when you were in business and you had to file a return on your library and your desk and your computer. Exactly the same
right.
thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, how widespread is this? It seems to me that, you know, if you knew this were the case, you'd automatically appeal, but then you'd probably pay a lawyer and it would probably be a net wash in terms of your own, what you might save by getting your interest, in terms of what you might pay to get your interest. Give me a look at the...
Okay.
This seems like a very obscure little piece, but yeah. Maybe it's more widespread than I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I was asking staff about that and people involved in the assessor's office about that, and the frequency of mistakes is pretty high. The frequency of discovering the mistakes is not as high, and the frequency of appeals is very small. The issue is that when they do appeal, it's usually a very valuable account. You don't appeal a small account. So the incidence that it occurs is few, but the dollar value is high. And because these returns are confidential, I cannot give you exact specific examples, but I can tell you of one case in the last 5 years, a company filed an appeal for 2 consecutive years, and the total, and it was 100% was due to overreporting, was discovered, and the total value of just the interest alone, not the refund of the tax, but the interest alone was approximately $90,000. It was in excess of $90,000. So it can go into the, I think, examples of millions. Marion County assessors here. And they've had some accounts that have been in the millions, is that right? Just over $1 million in interest alone. And so on a few accounts, it can be very expensive, and who pays for this? It's the taxing districts that would get that money if it were not for the refund. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. It gives me a better look at what's going on here.
Yes.
I'm just going to ask you simply, what rate of interest is charged?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, it's 12%.
12%.
Or 1% per month.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. As long as we're on this bill, if we can probably sort of keep it in order, why don't we call up the assessors and let them talk about this bill in addition. I have David, is it Lawson? And Doug? Ooh, I'm in trouble. Hillpot. I'm looking for another letter, and I'm not seeing it. Gentlemen, on House Bill 2229.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doug Hillpot, and I'm the Benton County Assessor. And on House Bill 229, it's like all four of these bills, there's essentially a fairness issue here. And certainly we rely on reporting and accurate reporting. Mistakes do happen, but it's certainly a disincentive if somebody overreports and then can receive 12% interest, which is a pretty substantial sum, based on their own error. And that's really the kind of the meat of the coconut as far as I see it here. And certainly trying to get everybody on a level playing field. And certainly there are times that we discover omitted property and we are required to put it on the roll. They do have to the following year to pay it, but there is no interest attached. So it theoretically should work both ways, but currently does not.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is David Lawson. Members, nice to meet you. I'm Yamhill County Assessor, Tax Collector. I would concur with what Mr. Hillpont said. The frequency of double reporting is a little more than you might imagine. Some of these are complex returns with lots of personal property. Clericals doing the work, no disrespect intended, turnover with that staff. So we get more than we would like of double reporting, and it causes a workload strain on resources and then, of course, interest distribution. So I would concur with what Mr. Hillpont said. This is a fairness issue, really.
Thank you. Questions for these gentlemen? Thank you. And while you're sitting at the table, I think that we're going to move to House Bill 2236. And the reason I do that is because all three of you are signed up as the witnesses on this bill as well. So, Mary, would you introduce that bill to us, and then we'll hear from the three who are at the table.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2236 allows counties to pay contested property tax refunds prior to the conclusion of property tax appeals. It provides for collection of additional taxes for payment and additional refunds upon resolution of property tax appeals. I believe the background on this is simply that in certain cases that may last months or possibly years, it may become very clear at certain points that certain amounts are due, and it would be in the taxpayer's interest to be able to receive portions of that refund once that's cleared up, and then they proceed with the case and finish it up.
Thank you. Mr. Phillips?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. Thank you. On House Bill 2236, and we brought this also at the request of and in cooperation with county assessors because situations occur where appeals do happen. There are disputes over value, which is a subjective decision in many cases. They affect people's tax liability. It's a very serious matter. But sometimes they can take a long period of time. And as the case progresses, some agreements are reached, and we get closer and closer to a final resolution. But the law currently provides that no refund is allowed until final resolution of the matter. So until the final appeal has been exhausted, which could go to the Supreme Court, rarely does, but typically two stages, maybe the Board of Property Tax Appeals, then the Magistrate Division, then if it goes to the Tax Court, this bill would say that if at the first level of review, the value is reduced from what the assessor put on the tax roll, they can issue a refund for that reduction, and the case can continue. But at least it stops the interest accruing, this 12% interest, for that amount of money that technically may not even be in dispute anymore. It may be in dispute, and the bill tries to say that this is not anybody conceding to any lower value, but it's just been taken off the table by the first level of review. So the concept here is to basically stop the bleeding. If part of the case has been resolved and the case is continuing, let the county issue the refund. Now, some of the cautions on this is that it's a decision of the county governing body, which can be the county judge in some cases. It can be the county commission, depending on the county organizational structure. They make the decision. And theoretically, they're taking into consideration the taxing districts that are in that county that are going to be affected. Then they issue an order to the tax collector, who issues the refund. So that's the concept, is to get these things, get the money back in the hands of the taxpayer, and to stop the interest from accruing on that amount of money.
Thank you. I think we'll hear from the other two, and then we'll take questions, if that's okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm David Lawson, Yamhill County Assessor. I can speak to this issue dramatically. When a large industrial appeal occurs, and it does because businesses are cyclical, and you're looking at maybe $100 or $200 million reduction in the roll, we set aside one quarter of 1% so that when the refund is issued that we can pay the refund with interest until litigation occurs. And sometimes, for instance, it can take years just because these are complex properties and it takes a lot of negotiations. So it would make good governments, I believe, to allow the county, with or without the plaintiff's agreement, to reduce the appeal value to a value that we think that we could litigate in court at the end of the negotiation, so that we could return the money to the taxing districts and they could continue to budget. And I think this is really important because businesses are cyclical. And we need to, when we're in a magistrate or in any of the appeal process, be able to have a tool to help alleviate the erosion to the taxing districts by us holding the money. And then when it's litigated, close out the books or get a refund from the taxpayer if we sustain our values. So I'm very supportive of this.
Mr. Philpott?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doug Hillpott. I'm Benton County Assessor, and I'm testifying on House Bill 2236. I concur with the other two. Certainly, the effects on the taxing districts, as well as it gets virtually the undisputed part of those dollars back to the taxpayer right away. So there's certainly a win-win out of this. And what I neglected to say before when I testified is the Association of County Assessors supports all four of these bills. And to restate it again, it's basically a fairness issue, and that's why we are behind these. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just kind of curious, that could be for any one of you, but John, you mentioned it, with the concept is to stop the bleeding. I mean, to go through the whole process of three different steps through judiciary, I mean, to finally get to the Supreme Court, what's been some of the longest times that you know of or are aware of how long the bleeding has occurred? A specific case.
I can speak to several of my large industrial appeals. We had a mill in our county, steel mill, was 2.5 years in litigation. We just came to closure last Friday with SP Newsprint, which is our biggest taxpayer in my county, through hard negotiations. And that one took 14 months, but we did some extraordinary business on that. We did pretty much what I testified that this bill would allow us to do, sir and members.
Okay. Thank you.
Were there other questions?
It's a comment. It's parenthetical to all of it. So let me go ahead.
Representative Reed, I think, may have had
a brief question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the bill passes and the assessor provides a refund at the decided upon point, and an appeal continues, it's overturned. Does the taxpayer then just pay back the amount that was refunded without interest?
Okay.
In other words, maybe I restate it. Does interest accrue for the taxpayer if the appeal is decided in favor of the county?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reed, if the value is determined to exceed the amount that was either initially asserted by the assessor or decided, you know, at the earlier appeal, the taxpayer will be billed for the additional tax, and no interest will be due. As long as they pay it within and the law says, the 16th of the month following the decision.
Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Brown?
Well, I wanted to make a point after they're done on this current bill. I don't know if we're there yet.
Well, I have a couple of questions, if I may, then. Under the current law, you lose a case. The county has to refund the taxes paid and interest due. It could be a couple of years. Who pays the interest? How is that calculated? It doesn't come out of your salary, so what happens?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the refund is made out of an account that's called, and the tax collectors mentioned this on Monday, it's called the unsegregated tax collection account. And that all that means is that every dollar that comes in from every payment in the county is put into one account. And then they created that distribution schedule that says county gets X percent, cities get these percentages, and it is their relative share of the total taxes levied. So the distribution schedule directs every dollar to those taxing districts. The refund is made out of that account. So whatever's taken out of that account for refunded taxes and interest is just money that is not distributed to the taxing districts.
So let me follow up on that then. So essentially what it means is that every taxing entity would take a cut based on, given the cost of the interest of some amount.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay.
And that, not to go too far afield, but in the NORPAC situation in Marion County, districts outside of the area of that property contributed to that interest payment, because the concept is that all the districts in the county share in any losses to that account so that none of them bear the burden in any given year for any specific appeal. It's kind of a all boats are floated. Or
an appeal could happen in any part of the county, in any district.
Exactly.
And okay, so everybody covers everything. All right. Other questions? Representative Brennan, your comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These last two bills just bring to my mind one question, but comment as well, and what an extraordinary high rate of interest. And I've got to think, Mr. Chair, that this is a fixed rate that had to, I don't know the statute, but it had to have been established when Oregon had a much higher inflation and interest rate environment, and something maybe our committee should look at. I mean, if you think about it, think about potential abuse in the first bill we looked at. What a great investment to actually overpay your taxes, because where else are you going to get a guaranteed 12% rate of return? I mean, I started thinking, wow, that worked out pretty well. We ought to look at some sort of a variable rate that's more market driven than this arbitrary 12%, which is extraordinary, Mr. Chair. So
perhaps Representative Brin, you'd like to be a committee of one to look at.
Yeah, right.
I think you're onto something, though. There are a number of statutory rates that apply for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Legislature occasionally looks at them, but probably not as often as it should. And that may be something that you and Mr. Phillips may want to have a conversation about.
Mr. Chair, if I might make a comment, just so that you're aware, this has come up in the past, and the department doesn't, you know, oppose any change, nor do the county assessors, I don't believe. They can speak for themselves. But invariably what happens is that when the discussion turns to the refund interest being 12%, it almost always is linked to the delinquent interest you pay if you pay late, and that's 16%. And so there's usually a discussion about if we reduce the 12, shouldn't we proportionally reduce the 16? Mm-hmm. And part of that money of the 16, a pretty sizable percent, goes into this CAF, County Assessment Function Funding Account, that Karen Gregory just talked about, to fund county assessor's offices. So there's a concern about reducing that percentage because, one, part of that money goes to the districts, the taxi districts. It goes into that account. And two, another part of it goes to fund the services to actually bill and collect the taxes. So we're not opposed to that. I don't think the assessors are opposed to it, but it does sometimes create a link.
We may not want to get that can opener out this year.
That's up to you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to talk with anybody about it if you'd like to.
Thank you. Other questions on House Bill 2236? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The last two, the only person signed up on the other two bills is Mr. Phillips. I'm not going to call you up now, but are there other people in the audience who want to be heard on any of these four bills? I don't see any hands.
I just want to say that.
Would you like to come up and give your testimony?
Just Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, my name is Richard Kreitzer. I'm the Marion County Assessor and Tax Collector, and I just had one real quick comment. There was a question earlier about the time span of how long it takes to settle some of these cases, and we actually in Marion County had five cases that were settled in 2005 that started in 1999. So they can go quite a length of time sometimes. And those were NORPAC and Quest and Sumco and then a couple other smaller ones.
So the two you mentioned are not small amounts either, are they?
No. The interest involved in NORPAC was $1,015,000 roughly. And the total tax refund was $4.2 million. So about a third or a fourth of that total tax refund. The Quest was $57,400 roughly interest out of approximately $1.2 million total tax refund. And Sumco, the tax interest was $140,000 out of total tax refund of about $860,000. So just to let you know that we're talking some pretty big numbers of interest here.
Thank you. Yeah. Any questions? Thank you very much. I think we're going to move on then to House Bill 2232. Mayor, would you like to give us a summary?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2232 will permit the boards of property tax appeals to waive penalties on delinquent real property if it is both the first time that the tax return was filed by a first-time filer, and this applies to all tax penalties that would pertain to penalties filed after or tax years after 2007, and its effective date is 91 signed die. From what I understand from the research on this, this particular bill will pertain mainly to probably commercial properties, if anything. And there was a similar bill on personal property a few years ago where the revenue impacts were very small, and I've got a preliminary estimate that will be very small as well.
Okay. Mr. Phillips?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. House Bill 2232 is a department bill, and there's provisions in the law for the local board of property tax appeals, which is the first level of appeal for most accounts, to waive or reduce penalties under certain situations. In 2003, an amendment was made to a bill that said for personal property returns, kind of like the returns that are filed on very, very small operations like a piano teacher or a psychologist or a lawyer, they file a personal property return. They can, the board was allowed, 2003 the bill passed that said they're allowed to waive the penalties, completely waive them, if that's a first-time offender, you know, first time you've ever been required to file and you failed to file on time. And that was fine. But when working, we work with the clerks statewide that oversee the Board of Property Tax Appeal process, and they can understand why, for the other kinds of returns that are filed, why can't those first-time filers get the same benefit? There are two other kinds of returns that are filed. In addition to the personal property return, there's a real property return for real property, and there's a combined return that's filed for certain companies that have both, and they're required to file what's called a combined return. So our thought was that if it's easier in terms of regulatory streamlining to have one process for all three, it's a taxpayer-friendly situation. Doesn't happen that often, but that way they, you know, would be encouraged to file. We want a voluntary compliance system, and this is one of those steps toward that. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Do we have any, we'll certainly get it, but do we have any sense what the fiscal is on something like this?
Mr. Chair, there would be no fiscal in terms of the cost to government to implement this. It would be minimal,
and
but the actual revenue impact,
yeah.
We think it's very negligible. One, because there aren't that many first-time filers, and the actual late filing fee is a sort of a progressive for most accounts, where it's 5% from to June 1st, and then it goes to 25% to August 1st, and then after that it's 50%. So it can accumulate over time, but our thoughts are that it's not going to be a very big revenue impact.
And who has to file a property tax return?
Small, medium, and large businesses, typically. So your small piano teacher example I gave you, if they have a certain amount of personal property, they file.
I'm sorry, I asked the wrong question. You mentioned that this would be referenced to real property as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who files a real property tax return?
Well, let's see if...
would that hypothetical piano teacher file one?
Mr. Chair, no. But let's say you had a commercial business like Starbucks or Walmart, or you know, they have real and personal property. So they might file a real property return and a personal property return.
And let me see if I can get this a little closer to my question. Is it? And I simply don't know the answer, which is the reason I'm asking. Is it when you're evaluating residential property, there's no return involved there. That's simply evaluated in the normal course because it's regularly on the books already in some form or another.
Mr. Chair, yes.
If a property becomes a business property, is a return required at that point? Or when would you file a real property return? Under what circumstances?
Maybe a county assessor that deals with that situation specifically could actually give a more probably accurate example. Go ahead. Would you like to?
Mr. Chair, I'm David Lawson, Yancey County Assessor. The threshold for filing is $13,000. So if you had a florist shop and you had walk-in coolers and computers and the things that you might need to make your business functional, and it exceeds $13,000, you need to file a personal property return. Big box stores like Lowe's or Fred Meyer, they have both personal and real. Fixtures are considered, like machinery and equipment, real property. So they might have a personal property return and a real property return?
I think you just answered my question. You're talking about a real property return would be required for equipment that's actually fastened down to the floor.
It's real property.
Equipment that's floating around on the floor is personal property.
That is correct.
Thank you. That does answer my question. And I guess a comment that I have on that and a question about that is that this is not likely to apply to a small business, is it? This 2232?
Mr. Chair, the law already applies. This bill will not change anything for those small personal property return filers.
I understand that.
That change would
I'm still talking about real property returns.
Oh, no, I don't think it would apply to small. small owners.
But that's the point of this bill, isn't it?
The point is to make all three returns, whether it's filed by a big box store or a small individual,
right.
If they're a first-time filer, that the board can waive their late filing penalty.
Thank you. Other questions? Let's go on to the last bill, House Bill 2234. And Mary, would you give us a summary for that bill, please?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2234, we'll change the process for filing an appeal, which is, under current law, a little, I guess, redundant or duplicative and confusing for the taxpayer. Under current law, an aggrieved person by an assessment of omitted property, that's property that the tax assessor determines should be added to the tax roll that perhaps the taxpayer didn't know about or forgot about, may appeal to tax court by initially filing a notice to either the tax assessor or the Department of Revenue. The time limits for filing the appeals and the process by which persons are informed of the denials of their appeals are not really defined by statute, but in a manner provided by the boards of the property tax appeals. This particular bill will kind of clarify that an appeal process would, by an aggrieved person, would be made to the Magistrate Division of the Oregon Tax Court within 90 days, but no later than a year. It also says the tax court would issue a written decision rejecting a petition from an aggrieved party, and reasons would be given, including an explanation for the basis for the denial. Basic administrative issue.
Great. Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips with the Department of Revenue. This bill is so simple, and it's such a housekeeping fix that I hope I don't spend too much of your time on it, but there's a provision that requires the taxpayer to notify the assessor of the appeal. The tax court already notifies the county assessor of the appeal. There's no reason for the taxpayer to do it, and so this would just eliminate that provision in the law. It's just a cleanup from changes that were made years ago, and it saves the taxpayer from having to do another thing. That's all it's about.
Questions? Everybody's already got notice. If this bill passes, everyone still gets notice of everything they're supposed to know about.
Mr. Chair, yes, a due process is carried out, and the court notifies, the court requires to notify the taxpayer and the county.
Thank you. Anything else? Are there any other persons here who want to be heard on any of these four bills? I'm not seeing anyone. We'll close the public hearing on the four bills, House Bill 2232, 2234, 2236, and 2229. Any other matters to come before the committee today? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, while Karen Gregory's still in the room, I wonder if you'd indulge me a little. This is a question I should have asked when she was sitting in the chair, and I didn't, and I'm happy to have the chance. I'm very concerned about impending doom in a whole bunch of our timber impacted counties, and I appreciate her bringing this particular piece to our attention. And I'm wondering if the department is considering, or if we should be considering, a change with a tight sunset that would allow the Department of Revenue to not redistribute all the CAFA funds, so that those counties that may be faced with that, there would be money in this to help them, and it wouldn't be redistributed as she indicated is statutorily required now.
And I'll note that she can answer the question, but I'll note that we're going to have an informational hearing on federal timber payments to counties outlining the issue on Friday.
Okay, well, maybe this is going to be part of this. I
think it's reasonably, because of your early testimony, to go ahead and answer the question now, what your thoughts and the department's thoughts are about this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Berger, again, for the record, I'm Karen Gregory from the Department of Revenue. There are a couple of short-term fixes that you might consider. One of them might be to allow counties that are experiencing the financial crisis to take some level of reduction in their assessment and taxation staffing as long as it does not allow for a reduction below the minimum requirements for assessment and taxation. Because once again, if you do that, then digging out of that hole over time is very destructive. It's destructive not just to the county, but to the local government and taxpayers. So if you wanted to change the statute to allow that kind of a reduction, more than likely a number of the counties that are facing that, that might work for them. The Coos County example that I gave you earlier, my understanding is there are two positions that they're planning on reducing, and one of them is a front office position. Well, you know, it's nice to have that customer service, but again, that is not going to take them below the minimum standards for assessment and taxation. So though that kind of a fix might be possible. There are other things that probably some good minds getting together could consider. The next grant cycle is due to go out to the counties in mid-April, and so right now the statutes say that we have to hold the dollars and redistribute it, but perhaps you'd want to change the law to have us hold the dollars until we could come up with an idea or something like that just for those counties. So those are two short-term things that we've looked at just very, you know, in the last couple of days, actually, because we didn't quite frankly foresee this. We did foresee the long-term impact, but we didn't really think counties would be taking these cuts this early.
Thank you. And
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You might want to be here on Friday.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't miss it.
Thank you. Yeah, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply would comment that better any way we can soften landings is a good thing. We are in session now, so I would encourage a work group to come up with something around this that we could, you know. I did not understand, I don't think before either, that any lowering of would result in penalties, but clearly any lowering is the standard now. So I think that this is something we should and can address in a very tight way that is only associated with the current crisis, and I would caution us not to make it too broad, because we certainly don't want lowering of standards to be considered the way we're going to do this.
Would you like to be involved in that
process? I will. I know I volunteered for that.
I think it's an excellent suggestion, Representative Berger.
Thank you.
And we would appreciate your good offices.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Berger. I appreciate the question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other business to come before the committee today? I have to talk to Mr. Werner about these short meetings, but for now, we are adjourned.